Good afternoon. We're going to open the Subcommittee on Natural Resources for the Joint Committee on Ways and Means for February 13th, 2018. We have two informational hearings that are planned, and if you would tell us a little bit about those, please.
Mr. Chairman of the Committee, you have the Department of Agriculture is going to give you an update on invasive pest projects. They were before the Interim Joint Ways and Means Committee in November 2017 with a request related to a continuation of the eradication efforts not only of Japanese beetle, but also some apple moth in Polk County, I think it was. So you're going to get an update on that. And then the Department of Environmental Quality is here to talk about their IT project, the Environmental Data Management System. They'll also be presenting to the Joint Legislative Information and Technology Committee.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm not sure who's going to be here for the, who's planning on talking about the?
Lauren and Helmuth.
Lauren, thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Lauren Henderson, I'm the Assistant Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. We are here today to provide primarily an update on the Japanese beetle project that we have. We have appeared before this committee and other legislative committees on this project several times, and most recently in November, to ask for additional resources. I wanted to just capture kind of where we're at dollar-wise for you, so you have that. And then I will hand it to Dr. Helmuth Rogge, and I also brought Clinton Burfitt with me. They are the program experts and the ones that are really doing the planning around how do we get rid of this pest. They then can also add on the other issue in Polk County at the end and be able to take questions. So we appeared before the E-Board in 15-17 when we first detected this pest issue in the Cedar Mill area in Portland and asked for $801,000 at that time. Our budget for 17-19 and one that was approved through the legislative process contained $1,113,000 for this pest. And then subsequently to that, and our trapping program has identified a much larger scale infestation. And we had asked for, in November, additional resources of about 2.2. That makes this biennium's total $3.3 million for this. I can tell you today that we will be working on a request for 1921. That preliminary is around that 2.2 number. One thing I've asked Dr. Rogge and Mr. Burfitt to do for you today, though, is put a glimmer of hope around those numbers and our hope that this year's eradication effort, we will start to see us get a handle on this population and therefore see those numbers eventually go down. That is certainly our hope. So with that, I will turn it over to Dr. Rogge and Clinton.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Frederick, members of the committee, for the opportunity to give you a quick update on our effort to eradicate the largest Japanese beetle infestation in Oregon's history. For the records, I'm Helmuth Rogge, Director of the Plant Protection and Conservation Programs Area with Oregon Department of Agriculture. And as Lauren just mentioned, in 2016, just to take you a little back, we found 369 Japanese beetle in the Cedar Mill and Bethany neighborhoods in northwest Portland, which at that time was already a record for us. This was about 90% of all the Japanese beetle we have caught in traps since we started to put out traps to catch them in 1988. So, our Japanese beetle program actually goes further back. It's 72 years. We started in 1945 looking for Japanese beetle already. So last year we started to eradicate the Japanese beetle population in northwest Portland, and we knew that we were tackling the largest Japanese beetle infestation in our history, but we were definitely taken by big surprise by the numbers of Japanese beetle that we caught last year. At the end of the season in 2017, We almost caught 24,000 Japanese beetle in that neighborhood in northwest Portland in our eradication trap. So this huge number that we caught kind of confirmed that the infestation had to be active there for at least 3 to 4 years. And looking back in our history, we record where we put out traps. We haven't had traps in that area for almost 5 years. So it coincides with the infestation that it grew that large until we found it. Nevertheless, the first year last year of this long-term Japanese beetle eradication project was a really great success, thanks to the strong collaborative effort of grassroots organizations and our stakeholders and partners in this project. We spent endless hours and efforts of our staff and of our partners and our collaborators to make this first year a successful year in the eradication project. And despite the large number of Japanese beetle caught, the good news is that over 97% of all the 24,000 Japanese beetle that we caught last year were all in the original treatment area. So if we found the ground zero area of the Japanese beetle infestation, and that's the area that we treated. So although now this year we had to double the eradication size, because we do have some catches that were outside the original treatment area last year, we hope and we're pretty confident that we will see this year a significant reduction at the end of the 2018 season caused by the treatment that we started last year. And Clint will go into the details how that works and why we always have a kind of a delay in the results, in the impact of our eradication treatments. But again, the question may arise, why do we do what we do, spending taxpayers' money killing bugs? But keep in mind, our department's mission is to protect Oregon's natural and agricultural resources from the impact of invasive pests. By actively surveying and for invasive pests and by aggressively eradicating any invasive species as soon as we find it, we protect our $1 billion nursery industry, our $400+ million fruit industry, our $250 million wine industry from the impact of invasive species. And because if we are not eradicating the Japanese beetle population in this particular case, for whatever reason, our industries would have to implement additional protective measures, which would also include, obviously, pesticides, which overall would increase the production cost for our industry. And also, our work helps directly in protecting and also enhancing access to national and international market for our industry, because our programs can show that we have pest-free areas from where our industry can ship out nationally and internationally without restrictions from quarantine measures from other states in the U.S. or other countries. Our work also protects, of course, our natural resources here in Oregon from the direct and indirect damages of invasive pests, which includes, of course, the use of pesticides that our industry and the public, if you want to grow roses in Portland with Japanese beetle, they will probably decide to spray. And so we can help minimize that use and protect our natural resources. So I let Clint here, after that general introduction, talk a little bit about the details of the project and why we hope that we will be successful.
Great, thank you, Helmut. For the record, my name is Clint Burfitt. I'm Program Manager for Insect Pest Prevention and Management. Senator, Co-Chair Frederick, the insecticide treatment that we used last year was to impact this next year's population. So we treated roughly 2,100 properties starting in April last year and ending in May, so that that insecticide was in the turf grass when the female Japanese beetle laid her eggs in July. When those eggs hatch out, those larvae are very vulnerable to this insecticide. The insecticide isn't toxic enough to kill an adult or to kill a mature larva or affect the pupal stage. It specifically is designed to affect the most vulnerable stage of the Japanese beetle. The field trial data that we're relying on to guide this project, and it's also been proven out in Boise and in a project in Orem, Utah, is 97 to 99% control of that specific life stage. So if our project, last year's treatment worked, this July and August, we should be able to see a significant drop. We're hoping on a one order magnitude drop in that population that we measured accurately this last year, around 23,000 beetles. So with that being said, last year what we found was a little over 97% of the beetles coming from within the treatment area, and actually 4,000 of those beetles come from one trap. So if you look, another way to look at this map is it's more like a volcano of beetles, with many beetles coming right out of the center of our treatment area, but then those beetles are being moved around through grass clippings and through green waste. So there's a couple things happening, is that people are moving, as landscapers are moving through the area, then they're being distributed that way, and then they're getting caught up in our traps. That's the main reason why we expanded the treatment area this next year, is to proactively get a handle on that. So what we would expect, based on previous projects and field trial data, is this area, the target area, to be reduced in 2020.
Do we have the next?
Yeah, you can switch the slides. And
there we go.
So the area outlined with red and the orange line in the middle was the 2017 treatment area. The area in blue and the area in red is the area that we're targeting for treatment. If you notice on the far left side over by Hillsboro, that is where we've diverted roughly 2,000 tons of yard debris and green waste. So we saw a positive correlation between beetle detection and the movement, specifically with grass clippings. So we stood up a containment yard there where landscapers could take it from the existing green waste operations and take it there so that it could go into deep burial at the Hillsboro landfill. So containment this next year, we anticipate to cost this about the same amount as the actual eradication cost. Moving forward, a couple weeks ago, we sent out a mailer requesting consent from roughly 7,500 property owners in the new 2,000-acre treatment area. 30% of those people responded back within the last couple weeks, granting Oregon Department of Agriculture access to their property. This week, we're in the process of going door to door and putting information on the people's door. On their door handles, because what we learned is that much of that mail doesn't actually get the intended effort. A lot of it goes into recycling. So what we learned last year was to go door to door and put it right where they'd have to actually open up their door. So this week we'll get another 5,000 of those out, and then again we'll just continue to follow up with the residents. We've had a very strong grassroots community response to this project. The people that I've worked with in this community really understand this issue and understand their role in protecting Oregon at large from Japanese beetle infestation. If everything goes accordingly, we would expect to start treatment this year on April 1st, and treatments will go all the way through till the end of May. We've also got traps that will start going out. The backbone, the cornerstone of this project, as Helmut alluded to, is a trapping technology. Without us being able to detect Japanese beetle reliably, statistically measurably, then we wouldn't be able to justify an eradication effort. So inside the treatment area, we've got traps every 250 feet. We'll have about 4,000 traps specifically designed to monitor this population so that it can inform our efforts.
And so, Co-Chair Frederick, with that is where we're at today with Japanese beetle, and so we can pause for questions, and then just briefly I'll have them talk about the Polk County issue, if that's okay.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. you say it's a 90-some percentile, the success rate. But how long in the future are we going to have to do this to eradicate this little pest?
Chair Frederick?
Because if you're only hitting 90-some percent, you hit 90% percent of the 7% that's left over, then how long do you think it'll take to eradicate?
In Boise, it took 7 years. In Orem, Utah, it took 5 years. This is a five-year project.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
I just want to make sure you don't shortchange yourself, because I think it is absolutely imperative that this get eradicated. I just wish we would have done a little better with sudden oak, which is a little different disease, but that's out of control now. So I think we should have learned from that, and this is money well spent.
I agree.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Escobar.
The one thing that Oregon is very, very vulnerable on, and that is invasive species. My understanding, we have feral hogs clear down to Burns now, and on the west coast, on the coast. My understanding that, of course, we're trying to stop mussels from coming in on boats. And then, of course, we have this, then we have the sudden oak, and, you know, it just, the hits just keep on coming. So, and of course, in the elk population, you've got the wanton waste disease coming, because it's over in Idaho and Montana. So I think that's our biggest problem. It's going to be your biggest nemesis will be the invasive species.
Mm-hmm. Chair Frederick, Representative Esquivel, thank you for that comment. We are fortunate in Oregon that we have the Oregon Invasive Species Council as sort of an overarching umbrella between all the natural resource agencies, universities, and industries to coordinate invasive species projects, just like you mentioned the feral hog we had a few years ago, a squeal on the wheel, squeal on the pick, something like this, a campaign. And we are actually very successful when we talk to our colleagues from Fish and Wildlife, Oregon Fish and Wildlife, about that particular project. They have a hard time now actually finding feral hogs here in Oregon in some of the areas. So, but I certainly can support your comments that this is for our natural and agricultural resources one of the biggest concern, not only for Oregon, but for the entire country as well.
Thank you. Any other questions? I'm curious. We had this, we've been looking, searching for these since 1945. We've had some sort of thing going on. Where else have they been, and where did we eradicate them, and how well have they stayed eradicated in those particular places?
Chair Frederick, so fortunately we have sometimes history in reports. A couple of years ago I went through our archives in our department and found some old reports from the 30s, and I found actually a photo from the early 50s where the, in that case, the entomologist from Oregon Department of Agriculture put a Japanese beetle trap on the Portland airfield. At that time, it was all just grass field, but we already looked for Japanese beetle, and it was in the text clear we had an insect program since 1945. Hmm. It was not very organized or structured, and I can imagine that we don't have information about it or data, what we found or we haven't found. Since 1988, our program, the Insect Pest Prevention and Management Program, systematically looked for Japanese beetle, and also for, and earlier than that, since 1979, for gypsy moth. Systematically, and that's where we have data from. So since 1988, since we systematically surveyed for the Japanese beetle, we found, until 2016, about 319 Japanese beetle. So now we're a little off with our statistics. We have to add a few more zeros.
24,000?
Yes.
Wow. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Now, is there something... And you also wanted to talk about another moth, is that correct?
Yeah. So, Chair Frederick and members of the committee, in 2010 we found what's called light brown apple moth, which is a quarantine pest only known to occur in California. And we found it at the nursery in Polk County, just across the river. We put out what we usually do immediately, more traps to find it. And we surveyed and delimited that area for 3 years. We did not find it again. So we called it a regulatory incident. It was one male that we caught. In 2016, I guess, again, we caught several ones in the same neighborhood, in the same nursery and an adjacent orchard. So we delimited again. And last year, we started a large-scale eradication of about 500 acres in that area, which is very innovative. Nobody has done that in the country, because only California has it at the moment, what we know of. We used what we use against the gypsy moth, a bacteria, Bacillus thuringiensis. We sprayed that 3 times, and we used also a sexual pheromone to confuse the males so they can't find the females in that area. And this helped us at least, so knock on wood, we also added light traps to make sure that there's nothing there. So far, knock on wood, we haven't found anything last year after the eradication concluded. And we have to do another 2 years, so this year and next year, to confirm that this population is gone. This would be a major problem for our nursery industry and also for our fruit industry, more than anything for the quarantine restrictions that many states and many countries have on that particular light brown apple moth.
Thank you. Any other questions on the light brown apple moth? No? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would just note that in November, the Interim Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved general fund, recommended approval of general fund during this session to deal with the beetles problem. Since then, we've been looking at the lottery forecast has been going up, and so provided that on Friday the lottery forecast is still up, it's likely that Measure 76 lottery funds will be used to fund this work instead of general fund. So just want to note that for the record.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the presentation. Appreciate it. And the work. And now we have an informational hearing on the Environmental Data Management System of the Department of Environmental Quality. Mr. Whitman, how are you?
I'm well. Good afternoon. Chair Frederick, members of the committee. For the record, Richard Whitman, the director of the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. It's a pleasure to be here today and provide an update on our environmental data management system. I want to start by introducing some members of the team that are working on this. First of all, immediately to my right is Angel Gillette, who's the project manager for this EDMS project. And then to her right is Daryl Landrum, the senior IT portfolio manager, or ACE senior portfolio manager for the Oregon State Chief Information Officer. We also have Scott Bruin here, who, as you may know, is taking a position as the administrator for Central Services for DEQ. I'm going to introduce this and give you a little bit of what the problem is that we're trying to fix with this project. And then Angel is going to talk a little bit more about what the value add is of the project, what the cost to date of the project have been, and what the funding ask is. As a reminder for the committee, back in our budget hearings in the 2017 session, the legislature did appropriate money for this project to get us from what's called Stage Gate 1 approval by the Chief Information Officer to Stage Gate 2. And I'm very pleased to say, and thanks to hard work of staff, that we just a few days ago received Stage Gate 2 approval from the Chief Information Officer. So we've been working very hard to keep this project moving forward. It is a critical part of the work we're doing around some of our core permitting and regulatory programs to get things back on track in the agency, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit more in a minute. Okay. So first of all, a little bit of history. The Department of Environmental Quality grew up in Oregon with programs focused on water quality, on air quality, and land quality. As we entered the information technology age, as many other organizations did, we built information technology systems around each of those programs. And that fundamental architecture is still where we are today. We have multiple systems for each of those programs. And actually, if you could get the next, okay. Well, so we have multiple systems for each program. And that means that if you are a business in Oregon and you require permits from the Department of Environmental Quality, you could theoretically be receiving 5 or even 10 invoices from the agency for DEQ permits in any given month because of all these different systems that we have. So that creates quite a bit of confusion. But before I talk about that, I want to talk just a little bit more about the problem driving this. And that is the issues with some of our core regulatory programs. I appeared yesterday before the Joint Legislative Audit Committee to discuss with that committee the audit that the Secretary of State recently did of DEQ's air quality program. And the fundamental finding of that audit is that we have a backlog in our work on renewal of air quality permits on the order of about 45%. And this chart that you see in front of you now shows the trend in terms of backlog both for water quality permits and air quality permits. The top green line is air quality permits. The bottom line is water quality permits. We also had an external review of our water quality program that was completed about a year and a half ago that found some similar issues in our water quality program and made some specific recommendations. And among those recommendations are to modernize our IT systems and to centralize some of the permitting regulatory work that has been split between a large number of staff. So this project is very much a part of a response to the report that was done on the water quality program and the recent Secretary of State audit. Next slide. So this is just a sampling of about 130 legacy IT systems that the agency has. We have, you know, in any particular year, the agency issues around 16,700 permits per year. And so core functions include managing that permit workload, invoicing related to that work, inspection and tracking related to those permits, tracking of environmental conditions and environmental data, and then finally enforcement. And so all these different systems have grown up around specific programs and sub-programs in each of those areas. Okay, next slide, please. So at this point, I'll pause and see if there are any questions from the committee about what the problem is that we're trying to fix with this. And if there are no questions, we're going to transition over to Angel, who's going to talk about some of what this project is designed to do.
Any questions?
Yes,
Representative Lewis. Chair, you mentioned the 45% air quality permit backlog and the other backlog for water. Once the IT system is fixed, is that going to take care of all the backlog, or are there other issues besides IT issues?
Thank you, Co-Chair Frederick, Representative Lewis. This is a necessary part of the fix, but it is not by itself sufficient to fix these problems. The Secretary of State audit for the AIR program identified several fundamental problems that are driving the increasing backlog in that program, and those include resource funding issues, some internal process improvement work that needs to be done, and I'll speak to that in just a second. And then actually time that staff are spending working on air toxics issues, because we don't have a stable program for that issue right now. But on the process, I want to talk about the process improvement piece for a moment. Secretary of State audit suggested, recommended, and we are currently starting a workload analysis in our air quality program. We've done that work already, or in the middle of that work, for our water quality program. And that will be having that baseline information of what the current state is. Then we're going to be doing a lean process improvement, actually, for both programs, and making changes in how staff are assigned and how they do their work. And so that's very much integrated with this project. This is really an IT project in support of a process improvement project.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
No.
Okay.
Thank you, co-chairs and other members of the committee. Once again, for the record, my name is Angel Gillette, and I'm the EDMS project manager at DEQ. So as Director Whitman mentioned, part of this project is standardizing similar business processes, including permitting. So it is an IT project, but it also has that other component of standardization. So we are going to standardize permitting across air, land, and water. And this will improve DEQ's services to the public. It will increase efficiency. The time to issue permits will decrease, and that will in turn decrease the backlog. EDMS will provide a portal for the public, the regulated community, and DEQ staff. Where are we now? So, as Director Whitman mentioned, we achieved Stage Gate 1 in February of 2017, and we just achieved Stage Gate 2 in February of 2018. In between those two checkpoints, we completed a lot of business analysis for air, land, and water, because one of the primary points of this project is to improve and standardize our processes. So our next steps after Stage Gate 2, we're going to use all the work we've done so far, and we're going to create a request for proposal for the EDMS solution. We will contract with a quality assurance vendor, and we will release an RFP. We plan to achieve Stage Gate 3 in November of this year. After we achieve Stage Gate 3, we will start implementation of the core system. So this core system will be scalable, modular, and configurable so that we can build on it. So an example of that would be our core system may include permitting for water, and then a next module would be permitting for air or land. So the actual cost to date, and this actual cost is through December of 2017, is up on the slide there, so it's $475. Personal service category includes staff, salary, and benefits, and the services and supplies category includes contract dollars for that business analysis that I previously mentioned for air, land, and water. So our funding request, we are requesting a $5 million bond and a $2.5 million general fund. So the core system build that I mentioned will go through December of 2020 and be about $7.5 million. And our 10-year total cost of ownership through 2027 is $14.3 million. Are there any questions? Co-chair members of the committee?
Do you have any questions? No? Okay. I am impressed that you have all of those particular areas that you're trying to integrate. It's what we all expected was taking place, but it obviously wasn't. So it's good to see this system being upgraded so that you can talk to one another and everyone can figure out where things are. The connections are going to be really important. I mean, just the fact that the DEQ, the environmental connections, should be connect, we should know about those within the agency as well as out in the field. So this is good to see. Yes, Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For either of you, in doing this work, I always wonder not just about internal IT solutions, but your connections to other parts of government, other related agencies.
Sure.
Are there any learnings there that you think we should be aware of?
So, Co-Chair Frederick, Representative Helm, there are connections, and so there are ongoing IT projects at the enterprise level across state agencies that are underway. I think you've heard of the Workday project is one example of that for time tracking. There's some early work going on the procurement side also. So there are those enterprise systems that DEQ is a part of and working with other agencies on. In addition to that, we do have linkages with local government for some of our programs, in particular, the on-site program for septic systems is administered in some counties by the counties with DEQ oversight. So yes, there will be linkages here to some degree between the department and local government as well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sir.
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, that's it for today.
And what do we have scheduled for
Thursday? I believe Thursday there's a grant, and then a week from today is you should be hearing a report from ODF&W on anti-poaching options.
Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that Representative Helm heard that.
Committee.
A week from today, we're expected to hear on the anti-poaching efforts.
Okay. From the department.
Yes.
We're watching. Maybe we'll have a bill down here.
That would be an interesting concept. Though, I like that.
I would note that they did send a letter, a request letter in, so this will be a work session on a report that then will go to the full committee.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So I will see you all on Thursday. Closing the meeting, the subcommittee meeting.
Oh, thank you.